Blog Talk Radio.
Time with Pastor Steph.
Good morning, good morning. Rise and shine. You're on with this due time with Pastor Steph. How are you this morning? That's what I like to hear. That's what I like to hear. For this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. So, where were you all week? We started off with the Due Time crew shaking the Monday morning blues, and our relationship conversation was, you know you're in a rare relationship that can truly last a lifetime when you make each other laugh. You know, a lot of times the relationship starts off with people laughing, but after a while, ain't nobody smiling no more. Yes, it gets real, real serious. And nobody wants to laugh anymore. Well, we also talked about, you know, you're in a rare relationship that can last a lifetime if you can have fun together just doing absolutely nothing at all. There doesn't have to be a particular event or an occasion for you to have a good time and enjoy one another. Okay? So, you know, there's a lot of ways you can tell that your relationship can last a lifetime. So, check that list out. And Monday is the day we get our switch tip with Shantice, and switch tip number 181, don't let the others give you their truth. Man, Shantice says that she can't stand the terminology, my truth. Well, unfortunately, that's the way it is. People are not looking for the ultimate truth. They're looking for my truth. So when you have people pushing their agenda, people pushing, you know, why their truth is the one that should really matter, that's when you get my truth, their truth. So you definitely don't want to follow that, as that really gets you nowhere. Yeah, you know how that goes. You know how that goes. Okay. Alrighty. Well, let's talk about a Tuesday church folk day rolled around, and we got to talking about that Bishop Lamar Whitehead. Yes, 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 yes. Oh, he's headed to do some time, as he has been found guilty of bilking one of his parishioners out of $90,000 of her, excuse me, retirement savings, and lying, telling her he was going to find her a home and invest the rest of her money into his real estate business. He's also been found guilty of trying to convince one businessman to loan him $500,000 and give him stake in his real estate business. Again, you know, we talked about this whole prison thing and what prisoners, ex-prisoners thought about the time that they had spent there. Well, this Bishop, a whitehead, if you will, he has spent 5 years in jail already. So you would think that he would, you know, think a little harder before he started, you know, trying to rob people and things like that. Well, we'll see what happens to him. You know, we're going to follow that story as we have been. Well, wow, Wednesday rolled around and we talked about the women men say they do not want to marry, ladies. They don't want to marry, Miss Gossip. No, a man does not want to see or know his woman is just talking about everything and everybody. Yeah. Well, what about that, Miss, I speak to my mother 5 times a day about everything, woman? Nope. He says, I will pass on that one as well. Mama does not need to know everything. Well, check out that list, because you may come across one that you didn't know was there that the men said they were not interested in marrying. Well, a therapeutic Thursday rolled around, and we talked about this heartbroken widow who had taken her husband's, her dead husband's ashes, his remains, yes, he was cremated, and had someone make crystal jewelry out of it. Yeah. And only to find out that the police called and told her that they had her husband's remains at the funeral home along with 34 other deceased people, and she needed to come and identify the body. Oh, then who is she wearing around her neck? Oh, my goodness, my goodness, my goodness. Woo! Now that is loaded. Not only did you think you buried your husband already, but then you thought that you were wearing him as jewelry, and you actually weren't. So, Woo! What a week, what a week, what a week! That's how we spent our time here on this Due Time with Pastor Steph. So, as you can see, it was a powerhouse week. Go back and listen and see what you missed, or get a refresher laugh, because you just don't know what you kind of went past. All right? All right. Well, today is Freestyle Friday, everybody, and we get to do anything we want to do. Well, Talk to the Men is what we do, and we can't waste any more minutes because we will have a short show today. We will be ending at 8:30, so listen, go ahead quickly and grab that. Go ahead and say the healthy breakfast. Go tell somebody that it's Due Time with Pastor Steph is on. And whatever you do, don't go anywhere, because we will be right back.
Moving is so much of who we are. It's easy to take it for granted. Multiple sclerosis stops people from moving. We exist to make sure it doesn't. Join the movement, the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. at nationalmssociety.org.
Good morning and good morning again. Welcome back to It's Due Time with Pastor Steph, and it is Freestyle Friday. Hey, y'all. We get to do whatever it is we want to do, yes, and talk to the men is what we do. And we got to put our roller skates on today because it will be a quicker day today, as we will need to end a little earlier. So let's see what we're going to talk about today. You know how you help me spend our Friday mornings getting involved. We have a list here. Toxic mothers who do not deserve to be parents. Now, I didn't look at this list, so I do not know what's on it. So, let's see who's saying what. My earliest memories are of my mom telling me that she had only wanted four children and had been so disappointed when she became pregnant with me, her fifth. That was the start of what has been one long, manipulative relationship. Now she's in her 80s. And she constantly tells stories from my childhood about what a good mother she was. These stories never happened. If anyone suggests that her recollection is less than accurate, that begins a long barrage of angry messages about what an ungrateful person I am. I keep her at arm's length for my own peace of mind, as do all of my siblings. I just want it to be over, honestly. Wow. Wow. Here's one. I finally got the courage to leave my husband after staying for several years to be with my kids. My youngest child had been diagnosed with ASD, ADHD, and learning disabilities. My mother told me to stay in my unhappy marriage because no one would ever love me, let alone want to date me because of my son. The joke's on her because I have been with my fiance for 6 years now. I should have dated him in high school in the first place. Wow. Wow. Last year, I attempted suicide, resulting in my mother and father moving me from Southern California to Idaho. They cared for me as I recovered, but when I refused to stay in their home for the 2 years my mother expected, she showed her true form. I was belittled for attending therapy. I ended up doing it via Zoom in their shed. My clothes were piled under the rear wheel of my car and run over, and the cherry on the top, I was asked to leave briskly at breakfast after only a month of the proposed timeline. As in, my mother ushered me to pack my bags immediately afterwards. I left by noon the same day. My dad uncomfortably conceded to her requests and opinions. Wow. Wow. Imagine trying to commit suicide and then having to go through all of that. Ooh. Wow. Mm. My mom told me she wished I had died on life support in the NICU, why in NICU. Whoa. Her defense to the judge when she tried to then sue me for just shy of $12,000 was she was a difficult child. She deserved it. We also had a couch funeral for a family member when my mom turned the conversation topic to the red light district in Amsterdam and sex work. Additionally, she cheated on my father with multiple men, including an international drug smuggler. The list goes on. We aren't in contact for obvious reasons. Good riddance to her. I am proud to have broken the cycle. Whoa. Listen, and you thought your mama was bad? Mm. Wow. I'm adopted, and my birth mom and I got in contact when I was 15. At first, we were super close, but then she acted more like an older sibling than a parental figure. She flirted with guys I dated and would get my friends' numbers and talk to them regularly, but hardly returned my calls or messages. My ex, who she didn't even want me to be with, and I finally split because he had been cheating on me and eventually left me for someone else. She told me I needed to do more to win him back. When I got a new partner, she acted like she wasn't over my ex and me breaking up the whole time. But weeks later, my ex visited her with the girl he cheated on me with and posted pics online saying how good it was to see them and meet her. Wow. Okay. Mm. Wow. I think something that is seriously underestimated as a source of mother-daughter trauma is being your mother's emotional support person. That was me. Every problem, I knew about it. Every fight, I heard it. All her trauma, yep. I was her personal therapist all as a child. Things only got worse as I got into my late teens and early 20s. It turned me into a people pleaser and someone who reflectively puts everyone else's needs before my own. It has taken me a long time and a lot of therapy to even start breaking those patterns. Wow. Wow. Well, how did you become a people pleaser? Well, I guess maybe starting out early. I don't know. Maybe that makes sense. I don't know. When my family unfortunately became unhoused due to my mother's erratic financial decisions, she purchased McDonald's for my sisters and me. She only did this to physically throw it into the bushes because we hadn't done our chores for the day. My sisters and I slept in an old shack, and my mother and dad slept in the van. They had been gone for over 8 hours that day doing God knows what. We hadn't eaten for a couple of days and were starving. To this day, I'm still not sure what chores they expected us to be doing. Wow. Wow. Mm. I don't have a relationship with my mother because she left my dad and me when I was 9 years old. No note, no explanation. She rarely showed for visitation or paid child support and didn't fight for custody of me during the divorce. What was so devastating was prior to her abandoning me, I thought she was my best friend. I felt loved and cared for. After she left, she was distant and cold. I asked her so many times why she left me, and all she would say was, "You'll understand when you're older." The last time I spoke to her, I was 15, and I'm 50 now. I don't know where she lives or anything about her besides what I found online. Her abandonment deeply affected my ability to trust and love anyone. I never married and had kids. Wow. Wow. During my teen years, nothing could happen without drama. Everything had to be a fight. Everything had to be a fight. I could be alone in my room, and she would barge in with something new. I purchased a lock for my bedroom door when I was 13 years old. My dad had to be nice to me behind her back to avoid repercussions. I started to think maybe it was actually me because my siblings never felt any wrath, not a drop. They were given cars and houses. Meanwhile, I was draining my bank account for Ubers because my car kept breaking down and my rent kept skyrocketing. To say they got away with murder is only an understatement. You know, as I'm reading, you know, all of these different accounts of people who say, you know, that their mother should have never been a mother. You know, that's the whole caption of this particular list. Toxic mothers who do not deserve to be parents. You know, not making excuses because these were some pretty bad stories. You know, but sometimes you don't even know what they've gone through. And a lot of times they're coming from very hurt and dysfunctional times of their own life. And for whatever the reason is, they're where they are. And you know, sometimes people, you know, they take out on others, you know, what they went through. They don't know how to talk about it. All they know how to do is lash out. All they know how to do is, you know, behave the way they're behaving because for some reason they're angry. But a lot of times they really can't even explain why they're doing the things that they're doing. If you were to go and ask, you know, these moms in these particular stories, you know, what happened? Why are you acting like this? They probably couldn't even tell you why. They probably couldn't even put their finger on what exactly was going on. So, you know, just If that's your mom, just pray for her. Just pray for her because there has to be some level of turmoil that she's going through that is causing her to behave the way she's behaving. Okay? All righty. Well, what are we talking about today? You know, we have a short show today. None of my men are on, so you're still hanging out with just me. Well, you know, on Fridays I try to bring you some celebrity, you know, information or something about TV or movie world. Well, Power Book 2 Ghost fans, I got some news for you today. Well, they are going to end the journey this upcoming season. Yep. Now, here's what they're going to do. They are going to have a complete season 4, but it's going to be broken in 2 halves. So it's going to be a 2-part finale season, and it's starting on June 7th. So what, BMF started March 1st? So March, April, May, June, that's 3 months. I don't know what's coming in between BMF and Power Book 2, because on this rotation, this would be the next, you know, series in the cycle. So it looks like there's going to be some kind of pause, because each of these series only have, they only have 10 episodes. So that's only 10 weeks. Well, you're talking about 3 months, March, April, May, June, yeah, 3 months. You can have a little bit of pause. Well, they say that, let me see how they term it. This explosive season of Ghost is a fitting crescendo in a decade of an immensely popular franchise. Fans will not be disappointed. While this marks the conclusion of one chapter, our commitment to the Power Universe endures with more compelling storytelling on the horizon. Now, the next move that they're going to make in the Power spinoff series is called Origins. And this particular series is going to focus on the backstories of Ghost and Tommy. Now, what do you think about that? I'm kind of mixed. You know, they've been doing some excellent writing. I got to tell you, their writers are on point. But I don't know, because remember when they were first introducing Kanan and they were showing, like, footage? They were showing, like, Tommy and Ghost as kids. But we haven't seen Tommy or Ghost in any of this Raising Kanan storyline yet. And, you know, I would have thought we would have seen this by now, but maybe they're not going to actually do anything with Tommy and Ghost in the Raising Kanan series. They're going to hold it off for this Origins spinoff. Now, they say Power Book 3, Raising Kanan, is currently under production for its fourth season. So we will get a fourth season out of Power Book 3, Raising Kanan. And Power Book 4, Force, which is Tommy's story, has begun production on season 3. And Power Book 2 is underway, and it will feature Michael Rainey Jr. as Tyreek. Mary J. Blige is coming back as Monet. Who else will be getting back? We're getting back Method Man as Davis McLean. We're getting Gianni Paolo as Braden. So Braden is coming back. Remember, that's how they ended Braden and Tariq riding off into the sunset. Remember that? Woody McClain is coming back as Kane Tejada. Lovell Adams Gray as Drew Tejada is coming back. Latoya Tonodale as Diana Tejada, she's coming back. And Alex LaPree as Effie is coming back. So all of those will make their, you know, comeback. So that's going to be in two parts, y'all. I don't know what we're going to get, but that, to me, that was my favorite, the Tyreek story. I didn't think Tyreek's story was going to be my favorite, but it is actually my favorite. The storyline has been really good last season with the Ponzi scheme, and it was really good. It was a really good twist And I have to say, Michael Rainey Jr. is doing his thing. He is really, really doing his thing. So big up to Michael Rainey Jr. for carrying this show. He's got an excellent support, you know, cast. And, you know, I guess, you know, a lot of times these shows like to end on a high note. I remember The Wire, and that's when they first started ending these seasons short. Yeah, they weren't going to these like 9, 10th, and 20th seasons. They said at 6 seasons, David Simon said, I want to cut it short. I want to end on a high note. And that's what they did. So I guess, what's his name? 50 Cent doesn't want to end with it and push the success. So I guess the origins, you know, may have something. We're enjoying the Power Book series, so that's what's going on with that, y'all. What else are we talking about today? Well, speaking of the whole stars thing, Demetrius Big Meech Flannery, he might see an early release if all goes well for him. So, Big Meech, Demetrius Flannery, everybody knows who he is if you watch BMF. He is the storyline, him, Big Meech, and his brother, Southwest T. Flannery. They are the ones behind the BMF drug cartel out in Detroit. So you have this attorney, Brittany Barnett, petitioning for his release. They're saying that she's focusing on getting him released for, you know, he's been in there long enough. He's been a good citizen. Yo, what is that? I mean, are you serious? That's what she's going after. And she's going after what they call a retroactive application, where they can go back as far as a certain amount of time, so that when they get out, they can get out even earlier, if you will. Now, they say that, are y'all ready for this? So she's pushing the fact that this 55-year-old man, because that's how old he is now, he's had an eagerness for education, citing he earned his GED and is excelling in additional prison classes. For a 55-year-old person, that's something you do when you 20, 17. Really? I tell you, you know what? Oh, goodness gracious. Well, they say that he hasn't had any reprimands in prison since 21. Well, only in 24. And they say he plans to launch his new initiative called Build More Families, and he's volunteered for various community activities. Boy, I tell you, these people are something else. They say that he's looking to try to come out in 25, opposed to 2031. And they're waiting for the judge to decide on this here. They're saying that he's currently serving a 30-year bid in Oregon. Yeah, it amazes me when they move you like far from your family. Yes, yeah, so he's serving 30 years in Oregon for managing and starting the money laundering and drug trafficking ring, the biggest in Detroit history. They say they caught him and took him down in 2007. And as if you know, if you watch the show, he was doing this since the 1990s. Okay, now his brother, Terry Flannery, he was sentenced to 25 years in federal prison. But check this out. When Corona came out in 2020, he was granted a compassionate release. And in April of 20, he started doing his time confined at home. Because remember, they were trying to get rid of a lot of the inmates at that time in some of the jails. And he was one of them. Now, Big Meech attempted the same thing, but he was denied four times. They were like, no, 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 and no. So they said that, you know, hopefully he'll be getting out in 25. I don't know, y'all. You know, it... He had to do 30 years. So if they took him down in 07, 37 is when he'd be looking to come out altogether. So letting him out in 25 years, he's getting like a 12-year, you know, release, early release. That's a lot. That's a lot. So I don't know. I don't know. You know, these people, they do all of these things, and then they want their life back, you know. And, you know, when you're killing the community, remember, if you're following this story, this BMF story, this is their third season, and they're now showing how the two brothers started in Detroit but then split up, and Meech is in Atlanta, and Terry has remained in Detroit. So I remember this story, you know, many years ago. I remember this story. And they were some heavy hitters. Well, if you're following the BMF story, you'll see, you know, what their story is basically all about. So, he wants to get out of jail now. When you think about all these people you killed, all the families you destroyed, and you want early release. Nobody's thinking about this when they're trying to get this quick and fast money. All right, what else are we talking about today? Well, check this out. They've got this high school video that has gone viral out in Oklahoma. Now, it shows, oh my goodness, it shows this fundraising event. And you'll never guess what the fundraising event is. Well, they say at least four teens laid on their stomachs as they vigorously ate peanut butter off of another participant's bare feet. And they can't tell whether the people in the chairs were students or adults. Yeah. Now, they said the bad part about it is it was held in the school, on school premises, with the students in the school, and they said the students can be heard cheering as the other kids use their mouths to remove the peanut butter off of the other people's toes. Now, they say that the superintendent is livid. And the powers that be outside of the school is livid, because what kind of school hosts a fundraiser where the teenagers between the grades of 9 and 12 would be allowed to volunteer to participate in this particular activity. Now, the students paid to attend, so that's how they raised the money. Now, they've had a series of fundraisers for the week. So they've been calling it Wonderful Week of Fundraising. Do you know how much money they made altogether in the week? $152,000. Yes, to be exact, $152,830.38. But they, you know, they ended up having to apologize to the parents for hosting. Oh my goodness gracious, hosting this event. And like I said, the superintendent and the other powers that be are livid at this video and this occurrence. They say 50 million views. So, put it this way. 50 million views of the kids in a school eating peanut butter off of people's toes. Imagine your school going down for something like that. Yeah. So, they are mad because they're saying that's not the way we want our people to see our school. Well, that's pretty gross. That's pretty gross. That's pretty gross. All right. I need a 5-second pause, please. Okay, thank you. All righty. What else are we talking about? Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. I got one of my men on this morning, and we will be ending early today. It's just a crazy, busy week, so we're going to have to shut it down again today for me to have to tend to some important business. So let's see what else we're talking about before we get our men on the line. Let's see what's going on here. So they've got this accident, and I wanted to talk about this because, you know, sometimes we take a lot of chances, and this one was a costly chance. So there's a woman in Georgia who was at work and ended up having a very serious accident. So it says that she dropped her AirPod in, it fell in the conveyor belt wherever she works. It doesn't say like what she does or, you know, where she works, but it says that she dropped her AirPod in the conveyor belt. 21-year-old Alyssa, and she said that, well, a friend, the coworker, says that she told her to just wait. You know, when it was safe, she would go down and get the AirPod. Well, she said when she turned around, the girl initially said that she would buy another pair. But when she looked, the girl had reached down inside of the conveyor belt to get the AirPod. Now, they hadn't stopped the conveyor belt from moving. So her arm is now bent, and it pinned her to the machine. And she said all she saw was a bunch of blood. She said she called maintenance for help. They ended up shutting down the machine. They tried to take it apart by cutting the metal frame from around the conveyor belt so they could get her arm out. And they said when they finally got her free, she did have a pulse, but she ended up passing away by the time they got her to the hospital. And I wanted to really talk to you about that because, you know, a lot of times we're not thinking and we're taking a lot of chances. You know, let me do this real quick. Let me do that real quick. And I'm sure she didn't think that her being pinned would cost her her life. Cost her life. But unfortunately, it did. So please, you know, when you have these things, you know, these accidents and things like that, you know, an AirPod, something that you're going to pay what? I think I pay like $2 and change for mine. So, and I'm sure they don't cost the same thing anymore. So for less than $200, she doesn't have a life anymore. So use your head, people. Use your head. Okay? So, what else are we talking about? I don't have any earth-shaking news today. You know, for Friday, it was pretty bland. But you know how we do here. We make the best out of every story. So, we've got these migrants on the horizon again. And what they're talking about in this article is they have more of these states are now asking, like, Airbnbers, people who have, like, rental properties. They're now asking people who have rental properties if they could rent their homes to migrants. So out in Denver, they're going around asking people to please take in these migrant newcomers. And what's happening is all of these states are running out of shelters. And they can't put them up as fast as New York is even attempting to do it. But they don't have the space to do these things. So they're paying in Denver up to $2,000 a month to connect migrants with people who have housing. Now, in New York City, Mayor Adams has, you know, he's talked about doing the same things. You know, if you remember, we talked about the faith-based church, you know, housing of the migrants. We talked about them paying landlords, you know, who own homes to please take these migrants in. In Chicago, they have proposed that same thing to the residents of Chicago who have homes. They're asking them to please sign up to house these migrant families. They have Massachusetts, who's also doing the same thing, as they're running short of shelters, and they don't have any more extra room. They're asking them to please take in these refugee families. So in Michigan, they're doing the same thing, and they're asking people in Michigan, they're asking the property owners for at least 90 days of, they call it a refugee support program. Now, I'm sorry. This, here's what they're doing. They're going back to, because as I read the article, I see what, you know, they're trying to follow this pattern. I don't know if you remember years ago when people wanted to come here, when students wanted to come here for an education, what they would do is they would house, you know, house you. So you would write from like another country. And you would write into a family here that was in some kind of a database. And these families would house students to come over and, you know, go to college and things like that, but they vetted them. You didn't just have these people like we're getting them now. You haven't vet these people at all. And we've seen the criminalistic behavior of some of these people. So I'm saying to myself, I'm like, well, wait a minute. You're asking people to come in, to sign up to take these people on. Oh, please take these people. Please take these families. Well, what are you ultimately asking people to do? Are you asking them to risk their lives? Because for me, that's what you're ultimately asking. These people have come here, they've killed. You know, how could you honestly ask people to house foreigners who you know nothing about? You know nothing about these people. And you're asking them as though this was years ago where you were getting all of this information from people or about people. And when you ask the families to take in these students, you had that they had gotten their immunization, you had gotten their background, that they hadn't been in any trouble. You know, you had gotten their, educational background. You got their family history. They did their research. And I remember because I took in a student. She wasn't a foreigner. But she was from another, I think she was actually from Michigan. She wanted to go to school here in New York. And she was going to college. So she wanted to relocate, did the research, you know, took her in. She was a really good tenant, very good tenant. But during that time, someone had suggested that I do it, and I wasn't interested. But I did read up on the program, and I saw the difference between then and now. You know, like I said, they're asking all these people, oh, no, you know, you have rental properties. We're running out of shelter space. Can you take these people in? Based on what? Based on what? What are you doing? What are you doing to ensure the safety of your homegrown people who you're asking to help you out? Are you going to be there to save lives? Because these people are coming here, and listen, these days and times, nobody's taking in any strangers like that. You already, when you do research, you already take in some chances. So I don't know, y'all. I don't know about that. I want to see what our men say. Let me grab Brother Al. Good morning, Brother Al.
Good morning. You know I'm getting away from the noisy kids. Good morning, top of the morning, top of the morning.
Brother Al, I got a couple of stories for you. Well, this first one I definitely want to hit you with, as there's a story about an Oklahoma school who had a week of raising money. They had a week of fundraising. And one of the fundraisers was who could eat peanut butter off the toes of some other students. And this story went viral. 50 million views they have. And now the superintendent and the powers that be and the Board of Education are really upset because they said, what kind of school would sponsor a fundraiser where kids would be eating peanut butter off the toes of other students? And they raised the money as they had it like an entrance fee. Now, this was a school-sponsored event by the school. What you say?
What kind of freaky deaky thing going on over there in that school? I mean, who come out? I mean, that's crazy. I know schools do fundraisers. I get a perfect example, right? It's so funny that this topic came up. We had a fundraiser at my school last month. And what we did was we wanted to get the students and stuff. So what we did was we did hire teachers. So we had teachers that, you know, some of the kids said, oh, this teacher get on my nerves, this and that. So you paid $2. I think it was $1 or $2. And they made, like, they didn't actually have a pie, but they had, like, a pie pan. And they put whipped cream, and you could pie teacher in the face. You know, it was something funny and fun, you know, but.
Oh, okay, okay.
You know, somebody told. And you know, Pastor, they tried to get me. Mr. B, you going to be in it? I said, nope, because y'all going to pie me, and I'm going to get you back later. I said, no, sir. I will not be a partner. But, you know, it was all a fun, and everybody had fun. But
right.
Now you're talking about eating peanut butter off somebody's toe. Like, come on. Then, first of all, that's not sanitary. I don't care how much they wash their feet or whatever. You don't do that. These are children you're dealing with. Like, that's insane. That's absolutely insane.
Yeah. Yeah, these were high schoolers. And, again, it's a school-sponsored event. Say in the video, they show up to four students laying on their stomachs, eating peanut butter off the toes of four people sitting down. And they said they couldn't quite tell whether the four people that were seated were adults or students. So the superintendent is like out of his mind right now. And I think it's like you said, you know, it's not a sanitary practice. It's not something that you want to introduce to your students, even if it were clean. It's just not a good, you know, practice to introduce to your kids. I don't know, Brother Al. I don't know. You know, schools are not schools anymore.
And you know what's so sad about the whole thing? What's so sad about the whole thing is that everybody, they don't care about nothing but getting those likes and those hits. So they'll do anything to get, oh, okay, well, y'all may not like it, but we have a million followers. We have a million views. You know, it's so sad. It really is.
Yep. Well, they got 50 million views, Brother Al. 50 million.
Crazy.
From this one.
People like to watch nonsense. People love to watch nonsense.
Oh, yeah, you better believe it. And also because it's supposedly a school that's doing it. So, of course, people are going to really be like, what? Let me see this. You know, just for the believability of this whole thing, you know, people are going to be, you know, looking at this particular video. All right, Brother Al, we're talking about our migrants and the fact that these different states are asking people who own homes, people who own Airbnbs, to take in these migrants. They're paying them in Denver up to $2,000 a month to take people onto your rental property, whether it's a separate rental property like an Airbnb, or if you got a rental home, or if it's in your home, they're asking you to please take them in. So you got this in Denver, you've got this in New York, you know, this has come up for Mayor Adams as well. You've got this in Chicago, Massachusetts, Michigan. Yeah, they are like more and more states are adopting this practice because they have run out of shelter space. So what do you think about this? Do you think this is a safe practice? What do you think about this here?
I think it's good if you got separate housing. I'm not too sure about saying, okay, you know what, I live here and I got a room. Let me bring a stranger in my house, you know, especially if I got children and things like that. Now, you got a separate house. Like, I got a separate house. I was looking to sell my home, but if y'all give me a good amount of money to house these in my separate house, why not? You know, we need to get something out of it because you're cutting everything else. You know, you're cutting this, you're cutting that. We're not making any money off anything. You know, you're raising this. You see New York going crazy. They're about to put poles up in Manhattan. You know how crazy they're going to be? So I think it's good for homeowners who's looking for a little extra income if you got a separate place. But as far as bringing them in my home because I got a room, I don't think that's a good thing.
All right. All righty. Okay, let's see what your Pastor KL has to say. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Brother Al. Pastor KL, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you?
I am well. Thank you. I am well. How are you doing over there in sunny Alabama?
Well, I'm sitting in the middle of a thunderstorm, driving in the middle of a thunderstorm. Can't see
Wow. Okay. Well, you be safe out there. All right, Pastor KL. You've got the story of the fundraising week that the school in, I believe it's Oklahoma, they had. And one of their fundraising events was having the students eat peanut butter off the toes of other students. They've got this video that has gone absolutely viral. It's a school-sponsored event. So it's not like it's off the premises and the schools actually, you know, the school, the students are actually attending. No, it happened on the school grounds. The school is the one who sponsored the event. And the superintendent of the Board of Education, as well as the higher-ups, are going crazy knowing that now you've done this to gain, you know, to raise money. What you think?
I think the school should be shut down. Everybody who, whoever's idea was it and whoever supported it should be fired. I mean, as a parent, I think I should be able to sue on just a immorality cause. You know, I think that that's ridiculous. I mean, who does that? Even if that is your preference at home, we don't bring that to school. You know, that's a whole new explanation of toe jam. I'm not sucking nobody's toes. You know, at 16, 17, 18 years old, I'm encouraging children to do that because I don't care, high school or not, they're still children. Who encourages that nonsense?
All righty. You know, again, school ain't school. We have none. That's when we were going. When we were going to school, they have raised. Go ahead.
I'm in my 50s, and I have yet to suck a toe. I just don't understand.
Yeah, that's – I think they could have come up with some other ideas. I don't know. They don't list any other fundraising events for the week, but they call it the Wonderful Week of Fundraising. They have raised $152,830.38. Woo! So I guess they figured, well, if this helps us, I don't know what they're not saying what they are raising money for, but I guess they figure, you know, if we can raise this kind of money, you know, it's just immoral. It's really immoral. I agree with the both of you gentlemen. It's a really immoral move. And you know, what is it next that you're going to invite kids to do? All right, the migrants are back in the newspaper, and you've got all these states. Pastor KL, you're talking about Denver. You're talking about New York. You're talking about Chicago, Massachusetts, Michigan. They are now paying up to $2,000 for you to take a migrant family in a month, and people are doing it. Would it be you?
No. I mean, you're taking a chance with with somebody from here, you know, when you're renting out. You know, I've been in landlord tenant court too many times, you know, as a property manager. You know, now all these stories that you hear, you know, about these folks who's coming over here, listen, they're coming over here for a reason. You know what I mean? Whether for a better life or you running from something. Now, here I am getting a family that's running from something in my house. You know what I mean? What they're running from, I don't know. They could be running from drugs. They could be running from robberies. You know, they could be running from a bunch of stuff. But now I'm going to hide you out in my house that I paid all my money for. And, yeah, I might be getting paid for it, but you could be destroying it. No, and you know there could be one or two. It could be 22 in a two-bedroom. No, I'm not doing that.
Well, one of the things, Pastor K.O., that I thought about, and Brother Al, you know, you said you were a property manager. I've been a landlord. Brother Al said he's been a landlord. My thing is, when we rent out our space, whether it would be a separate home, whether it would be in our home, we do background checks. You don't have that ability to do that with these people. So my question is, why would you rent to a person who you couldn't even do a background check? You may be paying me $2,000 a month, but if you come in and do $10,000 worth of damage, how is that $2,000 going to help me?
Correct.
What do you think? What you think, Pastor KL?
You're absolutely right. And like I said, you know, you come in my house and destroy everything. You know, now I'm in the hole. You know, the $200, I mean, the $2,000 was supposed to be a come up. But now I'm in the hole because I'm using $2,000 to pay my mortgage, if you will. And now I still got to repair the place. Oh, I might as well have sold it.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that comes across my mind, gentlemen, is the fact that they're not vested. They have nothing there's no loyalty. You know, you're not worried about, okay, you know, like if we go to rent, we get a credit check, we get, you know, we do all that kind of stuff, and we can actually now brand you for being a bad tenant if you don't do, you know, the right thing. You can have that scar against you. So people are concerned about that. But when you're coming from another country, what you care? We don't have no information on you. So if you come and you mess up the property, then what happens? We can't, you know, now take you to court. We can't now, you know, scar your credit report or anything like that to tell people, you know, beware of this tenant. That we can't do nothing like that. They don't have anything vested into this country or anything. So there's no loyalty necessarily.
You know what else? What else, Pastor Steph? So okay.
Yes.
So I was a property manager, and most of our properties was rented out to people in Section 8. Why? Because that's guaranteed money. You know,
right.
They're going to pay, and all that other good stuff. But however, a lot of folks, you know, and I'm gonna say a high number, 75% of folks who are on Section 8 don't care about your property. You know, they do what they want to do. It's free. And then the crazy part about it, if they decide to break the window, if they decide to mess up the refrigerator, if they decide to blow out the stove, they tell you, as the landlord, if you don't fix it, we're going to stop the check.
Yes. It has to pass inspection on a regular basis, which means that you've got to make sure that your place, like you said, is meeting all of the standards. So you got to keep putting money into that until. And not only that, here's what I also think about, Pastor KL. You say you're going to pay, and Brother Al, you say you're going to pay $2,000 a month. What happens when you start getting backed up? Because y'all know the city and state benefits, you know good and well, there are times when they start getting overwhelmed, the money stops coming in on a monthly basis. What you doing then? And then you can't evict the people because it's not their fault. Oh, no. I'll pass. I will pass.
Well, Pastor Steph, I need to interject for a minute, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Because I have a second attendant. They changed all that. So they can't just come in, and they used to be that way where they destroy your property, you got to fix it and stuff like that. So what's happening now, because like I said, I got a second attendant, so what's happening now is that if they go and destroy your place and doing stuff like that, what Section 8 doing now is threatening them that, okay, you know what, you're not doing the right thing, we're going to take your Section 8 away from you, and you're going to have to live in a shelter. So majority of the people are like, oh, shoot, nah, I ain't trying to live in no shelter. So they do the right thing, which I'm glad that they stepped up to start doing that, because before, it was just mayhem. Before, okay, this tenant could do this and do that, they had all the rights. So they had the point now, what's happening, they got so many people on Section 8. They got so much people on Section 8, and landlords don't want to deal with them because of what they put us through. So they said, okay, you know what, we got to do something different because we got all these people and nowhere to put them. So now they're starting to add more rules in and put more stuff towards the tenant. Like, okay, if you do this and that, you know, we're taking that Section 8. And once they take it, you're going to catch it trying to get it back. So the people are not trying to lose the Section 8. So that's a fuss going towards, you know, the landlord. And also what you're saying is the backup. That's a thing that you take a chance with, you know, because, again, a lot of people, you know, were saying, me, oh, I wouldn't take Section 8 this and that. But it came in handy during COVID. Because during COVID, people wasn't working. The mayor came on and said, you cannot put nobody out. And people were struggling. But with me, I was getting that check every month, regardless. So
taking
a chance, even if you get somebody who's not in Section 8, you're still taking a chance. Because if that person that's not on Section 8 decides, I ain't going to pay you, you ain't getting nothing. You know,
right.
And what happened is you have to do research. A lot of people are like, okay, let me just get a Section 8 person in that. No, you have to get a research. The tenant that I got, they give me $2,700 a month. He only got to pay $78. So if he messed up the $78, I'm still getting the bulk of the money. So I look for things like that, and people don't do that. You know what I'm saying? So
Right. Just
wanted to throw that out there.
Well, thank you for adding that, Brother Al. But you walked into exactly what I said. See how you said, well, they threatened them. Well, you know, because, listen, people who have Section 8, they had to wait a long time to get that benefit. You know, they didn't just apply today and got it tomorrow. They had to, you know, do a lot of waiting. They had to apply, blah, blah, blah. That's exactly what I'm talking about. You've got these people who are coming over here. They haven't done anything. They are walking in. They have gotten here, and within moments, they've gotten housing that's being paid for. They don't have nothing vested. If they don't have it, then oh, well, it doesn't bother them. Now, we're not talking about everybody. We know that. We're not talking about everybody. You know, we are talking about there are some people here who are really looking to do the right thing because they value, you know, where they are now. But you do have those. And considering that, you cannot do a background check. It's Russian roulette. You don't know if you're going to get that one who's out here trying to really make a new life now that they've been given an opportunity in the United States. So, you know, like Brother Al said, you know, there's some investment. They still have to invest. They're worrying about, you know, well, I may lose my Section 8. They ain't worried about nothing. What they losing? They're going to a shelter. They'll still have a roof over their head. So, you know, this is the chance you take when you're going through all of this kind of stuff with this program, with these migrants.
Right. But what I always tell to people is, you know, what happened is when they start offering money, because Section 8 got to the point where nobody was taking because of what they was going through, and Section 8 was getting to the point where, you know what, if you take this tenant, I'm just going to give you $2,000 just for you, just for taking the tenant, and then give the rent. So what happened is people just look at the money and don't look at the situation. So if they were to come to me and say, okay, you know what, we got this shelter. I just saw on the news this morning, they just gave New York City $100 million to house these people and do whatever, you know, whatever they need. And I'm like, yo, that's crazy. So we got people here that don't need the help. But my thing is I tell people, you got to ask questions. So if they were to come to me and say, listen, you got this house, this is what we're going to pay. I want all this stuff in writing so if something go down, I can present it to the judge. Listen, this is what they told me. It's in writing. It's been notarized. So people don't do that. They just hear the money and just they don't see nothing else. But you have to do it. Okay, what happens if you're not able to pay? What I do then? You know, I need all this stuff in writing so I can have something to fight with.
Okay. Pastor KL, is that good enough for you? To as long as you got everything in writing, that they're going to give you your money, and if anything, if the tenants, you know, rip up your place, they're going to replace it. Is that like your only qualifications or criteria? That's what I want to say. Criteria, is that good enough for you?
No, personally for me, that's not good enough for me because, yeah, the writing is good, and then, you know, I got to go to court. I got to sit in court. You know what I mean? First of all, I got to wait for my court date, which could be 6 months to a year. You know what I mean? And then my house is still destroyed. So even though you might pay for it, I'm still about to come out of pocket if I want to re-rent it. Or let's go a whole another way. While my house is still destroyed, these folks are still sitting in there, living in there. I'm not getting paid. No. It's too much. It's too much. And then, you know, Al should know, you know, when you go to court, you know, and you try to evict someone, the judge still gives you time to get out. Now, you done destroyed my house. You done not paid for 4 or 5 months. But the judge said, I just can't put you out. You got 90 days to find something. Really? No. Your paper ain't fair.
Well, to tell you how that works. Now listen, because I've been doing it for a long time, so to tell you how it works, that's where people get the misconception. Okay? The judge, yes. You go to court. The judge will say.
Today. Go ahead, brother. I said, Pastor Kale, we getting schooled today.
Yeah, I got to put y'all up on the thing because, you know, this is where a lot of people mess up. And I'm always speaking and trying to give people that knowledge. So what happens, you do wait for your court date. So when you go to the court and you sit there, first of all, the judge, you're going to see the arbitrator before you see the judge. So they try to work it out. So usually when I go, I would say the same usual thing. I say, you know what, I give them 4 months to get out. You know, and then the person might agree, okay, 4 months. Then the next question they say is, how much rent does this person pay per month? Let's just say $200. All right, this person paid $200 a month. The judge signs a document saying, okay, you must continue to pay this $200 a month. This is where people mess up at. So now you go back home, and this person don't pay. They just leave it. As soon as that next month comes and that person don't pay, you're supposed to go back to the court, and they put in for the sheriff to get them out immediately. And that's where people mess up at. So when you see people sit there, oh, this person stayed in my house for a year or 2 years without paying rent, that's because you didn't do what you're supposed to do. It's in the document. People don't read it. That person, I had that happen. The lady's supposed to pay. That next month she didn't pay. I went back to the court. They called me in the 2 days later, and they asked her why you didn't pay your rent. She said, oh, I didn't have it. They said, okay, Mr. Bynum, I'm signing this paper. Take it to the sheriff. And they start to take her out immediately. So that's where people mess up at. You have to do the follow-through.
Brother Al, you
Because nobody can live in your house for free. Nobody can live in your house for free. And then people say, but it's the same thing when you get regular people. You go through the same process. That's the process
right.
of being a landlord. You go through that with people that's not on program.
Brother Al, you are 100% correct. You really, really are. So now, to your point, if you pay me my $200, you give me 4 months, and you pay me $200 a month, so that's going to be $800. But yet you owe me $3,600. Why do I want you to stay there? Why would I give you the opportunity for 4 months? If you have already burned me, whether it's Section 8 or whether it's Regular 8, if you have already burned me, then why would I give you the privilege of staying there for 4 more months? Of course, those 4 more months, you're going to pay.
Right, you don't have
and
a choice.
And that's what I'm trying to tell you. The judge is going to do what he wants to do.
That's what I tell people. Don't be just... No, I got what
you're saying. Wait, hold on. Hold on, hold on. Wait. Because between the kids in the background and both of y'all, I missed something. All right, so wait. Pastor KL, finish your question. Then, Brother Al, you answer. Okay, Pastor, because I got something to say, but I'm going to wait till this back and forth finish because I got something that I'm going to interject. Go ahead, Pastor KL. Then, Brother Al, you can respond. You can respond. Go ahead,
no,
my
question was, you know, and I was saying that he was correct with what he was saying, but why would I offer you 4 months? To give me $800 when I'm already $3,600 in the hole. And whether I offered you that or not, the judge is going to say you can stay at least 3 months. To me, that's just ridiculous. The whole court system is ridiculous. If you done sat in my house for 6 months for free, leave tomorrow. You already had a come up. How you survive after that? I don't care because you wasn't worried about how I survived.
All right, Brother Al, did you have a response to that?
Right. Well, but the thing is, that's why everybody can't be a landlord, because when you take on being a landlord, these are the things that come with it. My thing was just making sure, because I'm a landlord, to know my rights, know what I can do, what I can't do. When you go to the court, they're not going to throw that person in the street. They're going to give them time. You know what I'm saying? So, again, right, you're going to lose some money now if you got a bad tenant. That's just how it works. But, again, that comes with the territory of being a landlord. That's why I tell people, if you're not ready for this or to go through this stuff, do not do it. But as a landlord, we do have rights as well. And, you know, we go through some stuff, especially in New York. Every other state is different. New York is the one that put us through. In Pennsylvania, you go to Pennsylvania and not pay rent. You out in 10 days. They don't care about nothing. 10 days, you're gone. So New York is the one that has all these crazy rules. So I would say, if you're not ready for it, don't be a landlord.
All right. So I got something that I want to put out there. So the premise of this conversation started with the fact that all of this for a migrant that you know nothing about. Now, you're talking all of this, Brother Al, when you can go and do some research on the person and, you know, get Social Security numbers. You could get a credit check. You doing all of this for people you know nothing about. And you asking me to take $2,000 a month. All I see are the dollars. And now I say, okay. And I don't think about all of this stuff that the two of you just got finished talking about. I'm sorry, Brother Al. I don't care when I go back to court, you tell them they got to get out that night. I had to stop what I was doing, possibly working, to go sit up in a courthouse for you to be evicted in 2 days. No, not only that. Now you didn't tell me you gonna sign this paper. I gotta run to the sheriff's department. Wait, no, you know what? No, 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 no. Just by the process, Brother Al, of what you just named, I'm not going through this for somebody who live here or somebody who don't live here, the migrant people. So now you talk about I'm already gambling, taking you in and know nothing about you. Now, if something happens later and you decide that you're going to start wrecking my place, now all the channels I have to go through, no. You hit the nail on the head when you said, if you're not ready, you got that right, I'm not ready, and I'm not willing. If I had 20 houses, the answer is no. Talk about Pastor Steph if you want to. I'm already disabled. I'm not going through this for a bunch of people we know nothing about. I'm sorry. I don't care nothing about the fact y'all brought them here. I don't think you should now be putting this on the residents of the United States. I'm sorry, because it's too much red tape. It's too much paperwork. And if anything happens, the migrant benefits, and we don't. No. No, y'all want them here. Y'all put the shelters up. Y'all put the buildings up. Keep putting the tents up and leave it there. But now you're telling me that if anything happens, I'm going to be the one that's losing. All I hear is loss. That's all I hear. I'm sorry. Maybe my heart should be all the poor people. No, I'm sorry. You already did hurt. We can't house you. You decided to come over here anyway? No. I already got to deal with the fact of me not getting paid or going through all of this rigmarole, like you said, Brother Al, which I know is true. I know it's true. I know what you have to go through. Again, having been a landlord for years, I know this is all the stuff that you have to go through. And to me, to take people through this for your negligence, this is all your negligence. Y'all open up the gate. You have not closed the gate yet. You have not closed the gate even after you admitted that in the United States we cannot house these people. But y'all won't close the border? Are you serious? So now you're putting all of this on the residents of the United States. What happens if you house a killer? Now, these people have killed people for no reason. We just got finished last week talking about the one who they got here in Vegas. And now the one here, Alvin Bragg, let him go here. He ended up out in Vegas. They got him for two people murdering. He murdered two people there, and now they think he even murdered some people out in Florida, and they got, and here they didn't do what they needed to do with him here. So he's wreaking havoc all over the place. What happens if you got these people laying underneath your housing? No, thank you. No, I think this is no. This is us bailing out the government. No. No. Go ahead, Brother Al. You run back and forth to court. Tell them kids you'll be there tomorrow. You'll run back and forth to court tomorrow because you got these people up in your house that you can't get out. No, that's all right. I'll pass. I'm with Pastor KL. Well, I think it's too much. It's too much. It's too much. That's it. It's too much. Too much.
No, you're right. It's a lot. That's why everybody can't do it. And actually, that's why I'm getting out of the business myself. That's why I'm selling. That's why I'm selling my house, and I'm getting out myself, because New York law is just crazy. It really is. So I'm looking maybe to invest in some property out of state, but New York, crazy.
So
well, in the words of Shantis, amen and amen.
Well, before we go, I have a question with that, because I always wondered, how do you keep your eye on your property out of state? Because I'm sorry, a property manager, I'm not paying nobody, and I can't keep my eye on my own property. How do you do that, Brother Al?
Just what you said, property management. You know, some people don't want to do that, but again, it's just a property that I'm making money with. You know, like, okay, give you a perfect example. Just look at my other house, you know, before I started getting into stuff, right? My other house, my mortgage was $2,200, but I'm bringing in $6,000. You know what I'm saying? So that's an income for me. So I pay the mortgage. I got this money left, and the management company don't charge a whole lot, depending on what you want them to do. Now, the management company, what they'll do, they'll go to court for you and everything. They take care of all of that. You know, so my thing is just to make the money. Honestly, I don't care about the property. Be honest with you, I'm caring about getting that extra income. Let them do it.
Wow.
Just like anybody else. Yeah, I'm being real. I don't care about the property.
Wow.
My thing is to make my money. Get this extra income, right, and pay them. They go over there. They make sure the garbage is out. If the tenant ain't doing what they're supposed to do, they go to court on your behalf. So why not? And I'm sitting back collecting $3,000, let's say after I finish everything, I'm sitting back collecting $3,000 for doing what? Nothing. And I'm filing on my taxes and getting extra money. So that's my thing, is getting that income.
Okay, Pastor Kale.
And that's how the rich stay rich with property. I've learned that. That's how the rich, like, you see all these people own property? You think they watch the property? You think Donald Trump watches his property? No, they have management doing that, and they make their money. It's like you got somebody working for
you. I know that. But see, here's my thought. You go trash my property. You get the same thing Pastor Kale said a little while ago. You go trash the property. Now you thought you had all this money, and now you got to pay. So what do you do when the property gets trashed? You throw the property away because you don't want to invest the money?
Again, I let the management company handle it. That's what they have. They handle all of that. They take care of that. It's all in the contract.
Yeah, but,
the person
but,
doing
but,
damage,
but,
all
but,
that.
Not, again, that's not the question I'm asking.
You have
I'm
to
not
pay.
Asking who takes
you
care
have,
of that.
Go ahead, Pastor it's still the landlord's responsibility to build it back up. The property manager is just the watchdog. That's all
no,
we are.
Not.
We are the watchdog.
You
got to
look more on it.
Yeah, yeah.
No, they're not.
No, I mean, listen,
companies
I
look
good,
I'm telling you, it's all about what you
do. We go to court, but we don't spend that. Well, this well for me, I didn't spend my money to fix up your property. I didn't do that. You know, we inspected the property. We went to court for the landlord. We collected the rent. But when they tore up that house, it's still your house. I don't pay
you're
to
right.
put a window in because I'm the property manager. That's not my job.
You're right. It's just hopefully you don't
well,
get that. That's what I'm saying. I'm not arguing with anything that you guys are saying. That's why I said being a landlord is not for everybody. I'm not, all what you're saying is true. It is a gamble like anything else that you do. It is a gamble. You know, when you got a good tenant, everything is good. When you got a bad tenant, it kind of go down. So it's just a gamble. I just took a chance to jump in that and try it. And, you know, it's been working pretty good for me so far. I have ran across some bad tenants, which I have, you know. But, again, like I said, out of state, it's totally different. It's different than New York. They will sue the tenant. The tenant won't be able to get no apartment, have to stay in a shelter. Like, it's different out of state. New York is just pure crazy. Nothing.
I just got one thing. I'm too old for this process. I'm sorry. If I was 20, then maybe I could go through all this. Not at, when I'm almost 60. I need to find another line of trying to make a dollar. Because I'm sorry, this is just way too much for me. I'm not gambling
with
my I'm not gambling with my money. I'm not taking no chances. I'm here in New York. I gotta hope that Pastor KL is doing what he say he gonna do as a property manager, or the company gonna send somebody out. And if you trash my house, I lost my money. You know what? This was already in my head when I got into the business. No, thank you. I'm too old. I can't keep my eye on what I got here. No. And there's a lot of different things we can do to make money that, you know, either it's a gamble or something that's, you know, lucrative, but it doesn't take as much. And, you know, I'm not shooting anybody for what they do. All I'm saying is this ain't my line of work. Let me keep preaching the gospel, and I'm calling it a day. I'm not worried about nobody else where you live in Pennsylvania because the rules are different. I don't know about you, Pastor Kale. I'm passing on this whole business. No, thank you. Let me watch the house I live in, and that's where it ends for Stephanie. That is it. But you know what, Brother Al? You always give us a bunch of information. You're a wealth of information. Thank you so much. Pastor Kale, you got something to say before we clock up out of here?
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm coming to rent a place from Pastor Kale. I'm coming to rent a room.
No. We don't want your kind, so thank you. Amen.
Yeah, because I don't know if he becomes a tenant. He might be talking about that gambling thing. No, that's all
right.
No, thank you. No, thank you.
Hey, Pastor Steph, I'll be looking for my rent. He's like, but that's what you signed up for. You knew
right. You should have known it was a gamble. This ain't for everybody. Nothing.
You should have known that.
That's right. Thank you, gentlemen. We got a short day today. Thank you so much for your contribution into today's conversation. Thank you, Brother Al, for the real estate news and update and the procedures. We so appreciate you, how you multitask every time you're on this broadcast. Giving God thanks for the both of you sending us into a thought-provoking weekend. We pray you have a blessed day.
Thank you.
Let's get this benediction. May the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Philippians 4:7. It has been some kind of week over here on It's Due Time, make sure you go back and listen. We had a wonderful week. Thank you so much for joining us today. You've been listening to It's Due Time with Pastor Steph. Join us Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. where we discuss matters of the heart, mind, and spirit as you go through your day. Be sure to set your mind on things that are above, not on things that are on the earth. They will only serve as a distraction. Remember, prayer changes things. It's Pastor Steph signing off, and I want to thank my Due Time crew, the guys, for sending us into a thought-provoking weekend. Thank you for hanging out with us all week and helping us do what we do. Please do not miss this opportunity to give Christ your life right now. Please do not miss this opportunity to strengthen that relationship with the Lord right now, because later is not promised to any of us. Until Sunday, God spares, where we'll be back in the Word Prayer Project prayer room. Come on in the room and see what we'll be praying about. Until then, I love you.